Welcome to Hype episode 160. It's a little benchmark again. We're out of the 50s. They pass a lot quicker than the 40s did, I feel like. My name is Selena and I'm here with Pam.
Hello.
Hello. Welcome to 60.
Oh.
Yay.
It's our age is starting to show.
Are we Grace and Frankie age yet?
I don't know, actually. That's a good point. Aren't they like 65? We have 5 more years before we're Grace
okay,
and Frankie,
okay. Yeah.
Maybe.
But that'll pass super fast, because like after the 40s, that lasted for like a year.
Yeah, it's all downhill
from
40. It
seems to be speeding. We'll be at 200 in like no time.
Oh, man. Ancient.
Oh, man. I know. Anyway, we have an exciting show to get into this week. There's a bunch of entertainment news that we will be talking about. We'll be talking about how we have been hyping. We'll be talking about TV show of the week. Specifically, Pam will be talking about The Bold Type, which is going to be exciting. And then we'll get into your listener feedback. And if you would like to let us know what you think of this podcast or have any suggestions for us or want to have any additions to what we talked about today, you can email us hype@hypeable.com. You can find us on Twitter @hypeablehype. You can find us on Hypeable, which is hypable.com. You can find us on Tumblr, which is hypepodcast.tumblr.com. And you can find us on Instagram, which is instagram.com/hypeablehype, or just hypeablehype, if you will. We also have a Patreon, which we would love for you to check out and potentially support us through there. You can find that on patreon.com/hypepodcast. And we do a bonus discussion every week, as well as videos, and my video review of The Winner's Curse is up now. I was planning to talk about the entire series today because I figured I would have finished it, but I have not. I have like 100 pages left of the final book, so I'll save my full review for next week. But safe to say that I am really, really enjoying the third book in the series. Our Patreon bonus discussion this week is going to be talking a little bit about something that has interested both me and Pam in the recent week, which is this discussion going on online about whether we have reached a kind of like superhero movie / TV show plateau, and what kind of superhero stories that we are particularly excited about seeing in the future, and what kind of superhero stories we have had enough of. So that should be super interesting. So if you're a patron, then head over to patreon.com/hypepodcast to check that out. And if not, then we hope that you enjoy the regular show. And we're going to start this week with How We Hype, where we tell you what we've been doing in fandom this past week. So why don't you go?
All right. Well, there's been so much buzz, you guys, about The Hate U Give by Angie Thomas. It's a young adult book that kind of centers around the Black Lives Matters movement and specifically the police brutality towards the Black community. They're turning it into a movie. It's been number one on the New York Times bestseller list since the book came out not very long ago. And I was out in San Francisco yesterday just, you know, taking a breather, went into City Lights bookstore, which is amazing. If you're ever in the city, check it out. It's out in North Beach. And I thought to myself, you know what? I'm gonna treat myself to a good book. So I picked this book up and ended up sitting at this coffee shop, reading like the first 150 pages. And I'm almost done with it. It's amazing. It's so well written. Angie Thomas really captures the emotion and the voice and the feel of this entire situation so well. The book is centered around this girl named Star, who is a teenager. She actually is from a very rough neighborhood. It's a very like poverty-stricken neighborhood with a lot of like gang affiliations and things like that. And her parents actually put her in a preparatory school in a nicer part of town. So she's kind of like living these two lives. She's got like the prep school Star and like the Star from the neighborhood. And one night when she goes to a party, one of her friends from childhood, when they get pulled over by the cops, he gets shot unarmed. And the story kind of springboards off of that and deals with like her journey through coming to terms with what happened and also learning how to speak her truth about what happened. It's really compelling and super moving, and I highly recommend it if you have not picked it up yet. believe the hype, basically, because it's just, it's really, really good. I'm not done yet, but I think I'll be done very soon, because it's just like, you just can't put it down. It's so emotionally charged, but like, you can't stop reading it. It's great.
That's a good recommendation, and very timely for last week with the casting news and everything. That's cool. That was a speedy turnaround.
I know. I was like, I was in this, City Lights bookstore is well, North Beach in general, San Francisco is very, it's got a lot of rich literary history. It's where all the beatniks used to hang out. So like Allen Ginsberg, Jack Kerouac, things like that. So they have a bunch of different, like, it's like the coolest little bookstore. They have this whole poetry section. They have like, they're huge on like activists, like books on activism and things like that. And then they also have like a huge fiction section and stuff like that too. But I just like, I walked by it and I was like, you know what, this is like perfect because I've been wanting to read this and it's always nice to support the local bookstores and stuff like that. So that's basically like my Howie hype in two pieces. Like, first the hate you give, but also like support a local bookstore because it's always nice to do that every once in a while.
Absolutely. All right. So as I was talking about, I was planning to be super type A and have read a whole book series this week, but I, alas, I am not. So I did not, but I will be back to you next week. I'll be like A minus. But I did want to briefly talk about the sort of huge, massive, much bigger than I think any of us really comprehend pop culture milestone that passed this past week, actually the day after we recorded our last podcast, which was obviously on September 1st. 2017 at 11 a.m. Greenwich Mean Time, the Hogwarts Express left from King's Cross Station and it took with it Harry Potter's child, Albus Severus, and thus concluded the Harry Potter series because this is the day that the epilogue took place. This is the final moment of the Harry Potter book series. And of course, yeah, cursed child. Whatever. We can debate that. But yeah, the series is over now. We are living in officially a post-Potter world. But arguably we have been for a while. How do you feel, Pam? Do you feel any different? Was this super anticlimactic?
You know what? It wasn't. But I also like tend to get, I'm a very sentimental person. And, you know, my favorite thing about September 1st is like, regardless of the fact that this is the 19 years later, September 1st of like the books, I just love that, like, for as long as Twitter has been relevant, everybody stops on September 1st. And, you know, like the idea, like that magic that we all hold in our hearts of like Harry Potter and going to Hogwarts and stuff like that. Like, everybody stops, takes a moment to commemorate it. It's one of my favorite, like, fandom traditions. You know, it's like so cheesy. It's like we do it every year. It's kind of like that it's going to be May. It's like it shouldn't be that heartwarming, but it kind of is. So in that sense, I think that maybe that's why, like, the idea of the finality of it all, which is what you're talking about, hasn't really hit fandom because it is something that, like, we as a fan base commemorate every year. But there is something to be said about the monumental idea of what this symbolizes. But I think also because, like, Harry Potter hasn't died and it's not going to die anytime soon, it doesn't really feel like the end that it is.
Exactly. Yeah, that's exactly how I feel. And I have the same sort of, the September 1st is always like the, even more so than I feel like July 31st, because it is like the back to Hogwarts moment. It's not only where it ended, but it's also where it all began. And so, well, I guess Harry's birthday was. Anyway, that's not the point. Symbolically, it's where it all began. And so I definitely agree with that part. And I think that I wrote an article for Hypeable as well, and I kind of said this a similar thing, that the Harry Potter fandom is ongoing, and like the series has been over obviously for 10 years now and we're all still here, so this doesn't actually change anything for us. Like, it doesn't actually end anything. It's not like J.K. Rowling deleted her Twitter account on this day, or that the books like evaporated into thin air or anything like that. But I do think what is significant, and I think maybe we'll feel this next year, is that for the first time when September rolls around, it's no longer like, oh, this is this part of Harry's story, because it's over now, and we can be like, oh, you know, now it's Albus Severus's third year at Hogwarts, or now he graduates, or like whatever. But everything from here on out will just be like, extra textual, which I think is interesting, for considering only the actual canon of the Harry Potter books, because of course, like, Cursed Child does sort of offer at what happens next. But I don't know about you, but for me at least, it does kind of feel like a suggestion of what happens next rather than, like, legitimately, this is the eighth part of the story, you know?
Yeah, I think that, and I think you hit the nail on the head for sure. I think the best gift that Joe was ever able to give us is the idea that, you know, like, the faces change, but Hogwarts is forever. So there's always new adventures, new stories happening within the walls of this place that we've all been enamored with for all of this time. So in a way, even though Harry's journey is kind of done, it just opens up the idea to a realm of infinite possibilities. So that's always really nice. I think that anytime a story ends open in a way that's, like, satisfying, loose ends are tied up, but also open-ended, it just kind of makes you feel a little more warm and fuzzy.
True. And I do remember, full disclosure, I hated the epilogue when I first read it, and I still kind of do, because I was like, I was ready for that open sandbox of possibilities, you know? And she kind of denied us that, I feel like. So in a way, now, I guess, this is now, except for Cursed Child, she denied us it again. But in theory, this is the part of the story that's left up to our interpretation, finally. And there's no, like, blueprint for, you know, we're not going to pick up with Harry 50 years from now and being like, oh, so this was where the story went, you know?
Yeah. So in that way, that's 7 years later, it's like, yeah, Albus and Scorpius are getting ready to graduate.
Yeah. They're getting married. It's great.
Oh, yeah. Perfect. That's exactly what we need.
Anyway, we do have some Harry Potter news to move into, but I just remembered, before we do that, as part of my How We Hype, I do want to give a little shout out to another podcast that I guested on. Speaking of old fandoms, I had a chance to appear on the Aficionados podcast, which is at The Aficionados, which is Aficionados. They didn't make it easy for themselves, but they're doing a Lost rewatch right now, and I got to sit down with them and talk about one of my favorite episodes from season one, which was All the Best Cowboys of Daddy Issues, and I got to sort of dredged up all of my old Lost feels, so that was a lot of fun. So if you're a Lost fan, then maybe go and check them out. And I plugged Hype on there as well, so I feel like I might as well return the favor here. So yay, exciting times, podcasting solidarity. And anyway, back to Harry Potter, because that is what we love and what we're here to talk about. Okay, welcome to MuggleCast. The first news story that we have is that new Harry Potter is coming, quote unquote, a new exhibit is opening in New York City with never before seen J.K. Rowling artifacts. So as usual, America gets the Potter stuff, right?
But it's next in London year. Right now.
Oh, is it? Then yeah. Forget what I just said.
It's at the British Library.
I thought
Library.
It was new.
No. Okay. There are some new artifacts. So anyway, go on and tell the story. I'm not going to hijack your thing.
I'll tell the story. Thank you. That's fine. You clearly know it better than I do. Yeah, but as Pam said, thank you, Pam, the British Library's Harry Potter A History of Magic exhibit will be moving to New York in late 2018. So this kind of coincides, I guess, with the Cursed Child appearing in on Broadway as well. And it opens at the British Library this October, which is soon. And according to Pottermore, the exhibit will unveil rare books, manuscripts, and magical objects from the British Library's collection, capturing the traditions of folklore and magic at the heart of Harry Potter stories. Exploring the subjects studied at Hogwarts, the exhibition will include original drafts and drawings by J.K. Rowling and Harry Potter illustrator Jim Kay, all on display for the first time. So this sounds really cool. It also sounds like, you know, the encyclopedia materials that she should be saving, unless she's really not planning on using them. But no, and this sounds really awesome. And this sounds like for someone who maybe is more interested in diving into the mythological origins of the story and how J.K. Rowling got her inspiration and her process of developing this story. I think that this sounds really cool, and I wish that I had the opportunity to go.
Yeah, I totally agree. I love that it's like, it's a little bit nerdier. It's not like something plucked from the movies. You know, we see like the Harry Potter movie exhibitions and things like that all the time, but it is really cool that they're doing something that's a little bit, it dives a little bit deeper into the story and stuff. And I wish that I could go too. I would love, I really want to go see Cursed Child on Broadway, but I don't think I'll be going. If I end up going, I won't be going when this is there, because it actually opens in the spring on Broadway. And this is not premiering until, like, it sounds like towards the end of 2018.
So. Yeah, in October. Yeah. In 2018, yeah. But no, and this is actually real interesting, because speaking of the encyclopedia, there are actually going to be a couple of books released if you can't make it to these exhibitions. One of them will be called Harry Potter, A Journey Through a History of Magic. And then a second book with even more details will be published in the following year, or else later that same month. The article doesn't make it totally clear. So that's interesting, because once again, we're getting what is ostensibly the closest thing that we've ever gotten to an encyclopedia. And yet, it's not. Do you think that this is the closest that we're going to get?
You know, the other day I remembered that Stephanie Meyer released an encyclopedia for Twilight. And I was really bitter about it, because we can get a Twilight encyclopedia. Like, I feel like I know. We should be able to get a Harry Potter encyclopedia. I'm not sure.
Why is it so elusive?
I don't know. The only thing, you know, sometimes I comfort myself by thinking that there's just so much information. They couldn't possibly fit it into one bound book. But at the same time, it's like, they're releasing so many more Harry Potter related books. So just, like, take all of our money and release some kind of... I don't even care if it's an abridged encyclopedia.
Mm-hmm.
I know? Just I just want it. Yeah. I want it on my book. Yeah, that's... Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Should get the Encyclopedia Funko. It's just, like, a head. It's just a book.
That would be amazing. All right, well, moving away from Harry Potter, but sticking in the Warner Brothers family, we learned actually just yesterday that Suicide Squad 2 has officially found its writer and director, and that duty will fall on the shoulders of Gavin O'Connor, who most recently directed The Accountant with Ben Affleck. So still in the Warner Brothers family, also still kind of in the DC Universe family. And he will be tasked with the script and also with helming the project. There's not very much more news surrounding this at all. It's like way too soon. Production on the film is actually not set to make any headway until sometime next year. But we do know that Will Smith, Jared Leto, and Margot Robbie will all be returning to reprise their roles as Deadshot, the Joker, and Harley Quinn. And if you're curious as to why David Ayer is not returning to spearhead the sequel, that's because he's very committed to bringing Gotham City Sirens to life. This is kind of it's something that started as a side project between him and Margot Robbie. But Warner Brothers is very gung-ho about making this happen. So this is set to center around Harley Quinn, but she'll also be teaming up with Poison Ivy and Catwoman as well. So kind of similar, in a similar vein to Suicide Squad's, where the baddies take center stage. But more centered around girl power, hopefully, because it's three of Gotham City's most infamous female foes.
Mm.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Have you seen The Accountant?
No, I have not.
I saw it. It's definitely an action movie. It was a little bit hard to follow. It's not my favorite movie that I've seen, but it was interesting. Yeah, I mean, like, it's very dark and very gritty. So I guess that's very similar to what Suicide Squad was. Mm-hmm. Suicide Squad is weird because it did really, really well in the box office. So it's understandable why the sequel got greenlit so quickly, but it also got panned by professional and amateur critics alike. So I think that Gavin O'Connor has a lot of work to do, basically.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting. I'm curious about this. And I guess there's not much to say now other than, like, let's wait and see. And also let's wait and see on all those Joker movies.
That's true, too.
What a weird, what
I know. We live in a weird time. Ties very well in with our Patreon bonus topic, though.
It does, actually. That's a good plug. I was going to say, speaking of weird times for cinematic universes, let's talk about Star Wars, which, you know, remember this time last year where I felt like Star Wars was just, like, on top of the world and couldn't do anything wrong? And now, like, it's dropping its directors left and right like it was Marvel and just being really weird about its properties, basically. And the latest shakeup, director-wise, is that Colin Trevorrow, who was set to direct the 9th and quote-unquote final main Star Wars film, is no longer directing it. Him and Lucasfilm have chosen to part ways because they differed in their visions for the film. So there's kind of a lot to unpack here, including like whether we think this is good or bad, whether who we think we should direct and what we think that this says sort of about cinematic universes in general. And kind of, I do kind of want to stay on that just for a little bit, because I do think that this is like, it's something that I find particularly interesting. And I wrote a university assignment about this last year about Marvel and how Marvel it essentially functions like a TV show, you know, where there's a showrunner, which is Kevin Feige, and then there are the directors of individual episodes that, like, I feel like more and more the stronger Feige and Marvel's vision for the franchises, the more individual movies sort of have to adhere to specific, like, very strict guidelines, and they find directors that work well within those guidelines, and then they have directors that want too much creative control. You know, it was why Ava DuVernay said no to Black Panther, was because she didn't feel like she would be given enough control, right? And they bring in directors that have a background working in television. And now I feel like the same thing is happening to Star Wars with Kathleen Kennedy and Lucasfilm, that they're taking on this executive producer role. And I wonder if that's a good or a bad thing.
I think about this a lot, too, and it's really hard because obviously I think that we all know in the back of our brains that even like if you're comparing it to a television show, like there's no one voice that makes all of mm-hmm. the decisions. You know, you have like the showrunner, then you have the writers, and then you have the executive producers, and you have the creators, and like there's all of these roles that people have to fill. At the same time, it's kind of disheartening to hear these kinds of stories because it just kind of further cements this hesitancy we have to trust the higher-ups at Marvel. You know, because, like, they get all these great directors, and you're like, they're great for a reason, so you should let them put their own touches on a movie. But they're so controlling that you kind of have to wonder, like, how much of what we see is this particular director versus how much we see is just, you know, the Kevin Feige's of the world pulling all of the strings.
Yeah. And I think that's sort of an interesting, because there is this kind of like in movies and TV, like traditionally there has been such a big divide in how we like TV is a very producer and writer heavy medium because consistency is what keeps people tuning in from week to week. But cinema is more considered like quote unquote an art form, right? Because they have like auteurs who put their very specific vision on it. And like recently, television is becoming more of an auteur medium and film is becoming more serialized. And I think that this is just one of the ways in which that's like, that's coming to light, in that they're striving for this consistency that I don't necessarily think is what makes these movies great. On the other hand, speaking about Star Wars and bringing it back to Colin Trevorrow, exactly for the main Star Wars saga, these are episodes of a thing. And I sort of feel like, and I don't know how you feel about this, but I feel like Star Wars may be an exception because I actually want consistency between the Star Wars films. You know, like it was George Lucas for so long, and he knew what he wanted to do with it, and he had a very specific like idea whether you liked it or not. And with this new trilogy, like I think that it is more important for me that there is a clear like TV show style thread between the three movies than it is to sort of be like, oh, I can tell that this is an Abrams film or a Trevorrow film or whatever the hell, you know? Like, I kind of want directors that are doing this in the service of Star Wars and not in the service of their own brand.
Right. I think that's why Abrams did so well, honestly. It's because it felt like an extension of the world that we already knew, whether that was because he was such a big fan or whether he had help from the studio heads or Lucas himself, like that. Mm. I mean, that's something that
he tried to make a Star Wars film.
Yeah, right? He did. And it's like fan fiction, but for the big screen, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, like, but there's no way to know, honestly, if another director would treat the entity the same way or if they would want an audience to say, oh, this was so-and-so, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Because I imagine ego gets in the way sometimes, and you want people to see your flair in something like a Star Wars
lens flare. Yeah, I agree. And I think that, speaking of Colin Trevorrow, obviously there are a lot of reasons why he might have been let go. People are talking about, especially on Hypebeast, the Book of Henry had been so panned by critics that our writers, some of them were like speculating that could have directly led to them letting him go. Jurassic World obviously was, I mean, I thought Jurassic World was fine. You know, like, I didn't have a problem with it, and I didn't necessarily have a problem with Trevorrow taking on Star Wars, but I'm not particularly sad that he's gone. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I totally agree. I think that I enjoyed Jurassic World, but I know that there were a lot of people that felt like he used too much of the original.
Oh, interesting.
Trilogy in there to a lot of people felt like it was just basically like a bit of a retelling, you know, aside from this new bioengineered super dinosaur. So there's something to be said about that. I think that like people that are pleased that he's gone had a little bit more of a problem with Jurassic World than people that are just kind of like so-so about the decision. I would take that more as like a comforting thing. Like, he pulled so much from the source material to make this movie that was supposed to exist within the same world. If you're talking about a Star Wars stance, you know, it's like that could only help if you want continuity amongst your trilogy, your new trilogy. But
yeah, agreed.
Because we'll never really know. Like, they don't ever really like come out and say like, this is what I actually wanted to do, but they said no, you know?
So in terms of who might be taking over for Trevorrow, who knows, by the time you listen to this, they might have already announced it. But for now, there have been reports that Lucasfilm has already kind of decided that they want Rian Johnson, who is directing The Last Jedi, to continue. There was a report by Deadline that they had heard from insiders that Lucasfilm wanted Rian Johnson, and Rian Johnson himself has said that he would do another Star Wars film in a heartbeat. There are also reports or rumors saying that they might be considering J.J. Abrams. So clearly, like, if these are to be believed, they agree with me that they want consistency. And again, it makes sense if they're picking someone like Rian Johnson, because not only is he already involved with the brand, but it seems like Lucasfilm is really happy with him. You know, it seems a little bit like Rian Johnson could be Lucasfilm's Russo brothers, in that he is gelling well with the team. And we haven't actually seen his movie yet, so we have no idea if it's good. But by all accounts, it's very good. So I'm inclined to be like, sure, just let him finish out the saga, you know?
I mean, like, everything we've seen from Last Jedi looks great. Yeah. So there's no reason for us to believe that it won't be spectacular.
I would be perfectly fine with that. I also would say, obviously, people are saying, well, this would be great if they could actually like get a woman in, since Star Wars has a female lead now. It'd be cool if it was also led by a woman. So I would also be very happy with that, obviously. But I feel like that almost doesn't need to be said, because obviously we would always be happy with more women. But I feel like Rian Johnson, a woman, J.J. Abrams, everyone else. That's my list. Which is unfair, because I really like JJ's movie.
I'll go with your list.
Okay.
I mean, I feel like it's a safe list because you know that they won't mess it up.
Exactly. Like, whether they get Rian Johnson or JJ Abrams, I will be so happy, because I know that, or I assume that the movie that I really liked in Force Awakens, that is what I'm getting, something that adheres to that and that honors that in the last movie. And if they get a woman, then I'll be super happy because representation. And obviously there are probably some women out there who could do, like, obviously there are women out there who could do a fantastic job. So I would be looking forward to seeing that. So I feel like right now I'm optimistic because I basically feel like it's a win-win. And if they get, like, Gavin O'Connor to do it, then we can talk, but...
We can talk. Well, let's transition over into some TV news. This is also a story that broke later in the evening on Wednesday. Veep is officially going to end after season 7. And this news actually was broken by The Hollywood Reporter, who received a phone call from Julia Louis-Dreyfus herself, who said, quote, "It became clear that this season should be the last. We don't want to repeat ourselves or wear out our welcome. The story has a finality to it that feels end of series." Wow. And then executive producer David Mandel also kind of said something similar to Louis-Dreyfus and then added, "We don't want to repeat ourselves or be boring. It's bittersweet, but it's right." So that's kind of like, it sucks because Veep is just this, it's like this hit comedy series. Everybody has fallen in love with not our Selena, but the Selena on the series. Is
there could only be one
in her presidential reign. And she spells it just like you too.
She does. It's very hard for me to handle.
It's hard for me to handle because when I was writing this story up, I was like, wait, did I spell Selena? It right? Or am I just brainwashed by Selena?
The Selena. It's so funny with Veep, and like I really want to watch it and like it, but like I cannot. And this is like some kind of like inherent like narcissism on my part probably, but also because I have never had to share my name with anyone in my life. And when I have, it's been like Selena Gomez, who spells it differently at least, right? Or like Selena in Denmark is usually spelled with a C. So this, like, just seeing her name or like hearing them say it, I watched the pilot episode and they were like, blah, 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 Selena, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, I can't do it, my brain. So so selfishly, I'm glad that it's ending, but I also feel really bad because I know that we have a lot of listeners who really like it. So
Yeah, I totally agree with Mandel. It's bittersweet, but it's kind of nice to know that they felt like it was a good end cap while writing the series. And it wasn't like, oh, like, we have to be canceled because nobody really cares anymore. You know, I feel like
that's nice.
HBO shows kind of go for about 7-8 seasons. Like, it's like the average. But there's also a series like Girls where people were like really gung-ho about it and then they kind of like lost that momentum. And
speaking of lost. And so,
yeah, so, but the good news is that we still have a 10-episode series, 10-episode season 7 to get through before you have to say goodbye. They're actually set to start filming that next month on October 16th, and Mandel says that they're all really excited for fans to see what they've got in store for season 7, which is due out on HBO sometime in 2018. So
yeah,
and I'm sure they're gonna do well at the Emmys again this year. The Emmys are coming up next week, I believe, on September 14th. They've won 6 for outstanding comedy, or no, 2 for outstanding comedy the last 2 years, and then Julia Louis-Dreyfus has won 6 for outstanding actress in a comedy series.
Yeah, I was gonna say, so, as well, like, I'm also kind of happy that it's wrapping up because it gives other comedies a chance. Now we just need Modern Family to end, and then
Big Bang Theory
will be like a wide open game. But no, I think it's really admirable when shows are sort of like, first of all, have the ability to decide when they want to end, but also that they have enough self-awareness. And it's really interesting for HBO because obviously now we have Veep and Game of Thrones that are arguably like its two biggest, you know, comedy and drama respectively, ending roughly around the same time. So it'll be interesting to see where they go from there. It'll be like a Veep prequel show.
Lots of open airtime over on HBO.
Yeah, interesting. All right, so moving on to a show that is not on HBO, although I did just write a weird article saying why it was just like Game of Thrones, because that is my brand. The 100 has cast another week, another 100 casting story. They have added their third and possibly final main member of Illegis, William Miller, who is British/Spanish actor, has joined Ivana Milicevic and Jordan Bolger. He will be playing the villainous Robert McCreary. And this is really interesting because obviously The 100 is sort of known for defying expectation and defying categorization for its characters. But it does tend to have some characters that are arguably evil, in at least antagonistic to our main characters, and it sounds like Robert will be that. He is described as a mysterious prisoner aboard the long-distance mining mission sent from our time. He is a former enforcer from a powerful crime syndicate. His ruthless, violent methods make him a formidable antagonist to our heroes. So it sounds like while Jordan Bolger's Seek Shaw and potentially also Ivana Milicevic's Charmaine will be maybe a little bit more sympathetic, it sounds like this guy will be, yeah, like I said, a villain. And it's also super interesting, obviously, because he's one of the characters that are from our time, specifically like 2050 or something like that. So he'll be like, his style of crime will be familiar to us, which I think will be really jarring.
Is that where I'm supposed to jump in? I couldn't tell if you had something else to do. tell you had something else to say or not.
No.
I think I'm really excited for this particular part of the story to kind of take place. Because you're right, like, once you get somebody that is familiar with or, like, from our particular time, it just kind of, like, opens up the story to a new realm of possibilities. Because up until this point, they've all just been assuming, you know, what has come before.
Mm-hmm.
And now you have somebody that actually knows, and it's like, it's different from the second season, and they're up in the mountain.
The mountain men.
With the mountain men, yeah.
That sounded too easy.
Yeah, I mean, like, they clearly had an appreciation for what came before, you know, they had all the galleries and things like that, but it's not the same.
Yeah, exactly. It's super interesting.
Mm-hmm. I'm really excited to the mental rationality of how people like that will make decisions versus the Sky People are like, that's like my favorite thing about The 100 is how people rationalize what to do.
Yeah.
And so it's like, it's a whole new game, basically, with somebody like this.
And to have someone, because it's one thing to have like characters who might arrive in this future and be like, holy crap, things are different. Okay, well, I guess I better like fit in. But if we have someone who is like genuinely an antagonist, who is working from a very selfish place, then he might be more inclined to sort of show the biases and the sort of social construct of the world as we know it. So it's going to be interesting to see how he maybe responds to some of the series women, you know, because The 100 is a show where gender is nothing, you know, it doesn't mean anything in The 100, but obviously that's working under the assumption that there has been a time during which it has come to this, and for these characters, they are essentially existing in reality where we know that these things are a factor, so you might potentially see it play into his psychology. Or you might not, which would also be a choice, certainly, for them. But things like this, I think, are so fascinating. And I think if the writers choose to really dive into that, which you almost assume they must, because otherwise they wouldn't have chosen to tell the story, right? So it's going to really shake things up. And for some reason, I'm like more excited about a villain than anyone else. Although it is exciting, too, that all of these actors are from Europe. So, like, is this prison ship from Europe? Are these the bad guys? That would be fun. Wouldn't be the first time. You know what else I really wanted to say about The 100 before we move on? This is something that I noticed today on Twitter. I was thinking about The 100 and I started to count the characters, and I realized that for the first time in the series run, there are now more female main characters than men. Isn't that amazing?
That's amazing, but if anybody was going to do it, it's The 100. I mean, I feel like it's all about the female empowerment on The 100.
It's almost surprising that it wasn't like this before, but I was thinking, I was thinking, I was like, well, there was like seven.
Well, what's that like Peter Pan women. Quote? One girl is worth that Peter Pan quote. It's like one girl is worth twice as many boys. And maybe that's why, you know, our brains think that there are more because they're just what we do get is so amazing anyway.
Mm-hmm, they're so powerful. But yeah, but no, I do think it's interesting. I was looking up some statistics and maybe I should write this into an article. I don't know. But that only like 16% of all like network shows last year had more females than male characters. And I think it's like it's taken a surprisingly long time for the 100 to get here, but I kind of think that it's kind of astounding that they have, and I'm really proud of this little show. So I just wanted to be excited about that because it's cool.
Here's something that I cannot relate to the 100 at all. But it made me smile when it popped up on Twitter. Netflix has officially unveiled its Magic School Bus trailer. And I don't know if you guys remember this, but we learned that Netflix was reviving the popular cartoon series. And it actually stars Kate McKinnon, who is going to be voicing not Miss Frizzle, but like her sister, Professor Frizzle. So like Miss Frizzle's handing over the keys to the Magic School Bus and that's where the journey begins. But it looks like all the kids are the same. So it's kind of weird because I think I assumed that like Miss Frizzle was retiring or something. Cause like, but it was like a new generation of kids. It's not, it's just like, she is retiring, but it's just a new teacher. Anyway, that's neither here nor there. The most important part about this news story is that they released the new theme song, which was recorded by Lin-Manuel Miranda. So it's just like,
yay,
it's awesome. And it's like so cute. And I loved this cartoon when I was younger. I think it's like so fun. And the books too were like so great. I don't know. Is this like something that you guys had in Denmark, or is this something that's like completely like foreign territory?
I have no idea what this is.
Okay. It's really cute. It's like, so basically the premise is that these kids have this very eccentric teacher, and anytime she's gonna like teach them about something, they go on field trips, but the school bus is magic. So if they're learning about like the digestive system or something, she like pushes this button, and all of a sudden like the kids are like not just like learning about the digestive system, they're like in a digestive system. So it's like immersive education, and it's like it's really funny and like it's great. It's so good. You get like a good taste of kind of like the adventures that they have and the mishaps that they have within the trailer. So if you've seen that, you kind of like get a little bit more of a feel for what this show's about. But yeah, it's really cute, and the books are really great. If you have like little ones at home, or like you need to buy gifts for you know, primary school kids or anything like that, highly recommend the Magic School Bus books because they're super cool. Cute. Yeah.
It reminds me, the most close thing I can relate it to is we had a cartoon here about a boy who gets sucked into a bathtub, and then he, like, I think he gets turned into a fish. It's been a long time since I watched it, but anyway, then he, like, learns about, like, marine life under, like, because it obviously goes into the ocean, so he's, like, in the ocean, and then he learns about fish, and then he swims out again. I don't know. I just wanted to be part of the conversation.
That works. I'll take that.
Okay, great.
So the new Magic School Bus premieres very soon on Netflix, actually. All episodes are set to be available on September 29th. So not too much longer to wait. And every time you watch, you get to hear Lin-Manuel Miranda sing the theme song. So that's always fun.
Yay. Okay, so moving on, we have a really cool story here. It's visual, so you're going to need to go on Hypebeast to see it, and you will want to because this is so cool. Rami Malek, who is obviously known for Mr. Robot, is portraying Freddie Mercury in a biopic, Bohemian Rhapsody. And the first image of him as this iconic, you know, Queen singer has been released, and it looks uncanny, man. Like, this is wild. Oh my gosh, I don't even know what to say. What do you think? This like blew me away.
He looks so good. I know that my like for a while Sacha Baron Cohen was attached to play Freddie Mercury, but he actually parted ways with the production because he wanted to go into kind of like, he really wanted to dive into the life of Freddie, and Freddie Mercury's life was not always you know, positive. There's a lot of like downtrodden times and things like that, and he really wanted to dive into that and go up until the singer's death, because you know he died from AIDS in the 80s. But yeah, they just like didn't see eye to eye. They didn't want to do that at all. They wanted the biopic to be more of a celebration about like of life and also of the music that Queen created. So enters Rami Malek, and everybody was like a little bit worried, I feel, because you know now he's like the guy from Mr. Robot, and I don't think you ever really realize like how much a person can embody somebody else until you see them in full costume. And like you said, it's just he looks great. And I feel like they picked the perfect still. He's in an iconic Freddie Mercury outfit. He just looks so good.
He does. And it's so like what it is about him. I mean, I remember when the casting change was announced, and I think we were all kind of like, oh, well, Sacha Baron Cohen looks more like Freddie Mercury. But just seeing this picture, like as you said, you just realize how much it can be altered. And not even just in terms of him looking like physically like Freddie Mercury, but also just in the way that he, like, this is just one picture, obviously, but there's the way, everything about him, the way that he like tightens certain muscles and doesn't tighten others. And he's so controlled, but so like performative. And he just seems so in the space of Freddie Mercury that I don't think, you know, this is like best case scenario. And it's just a picture, you know, we don't know it more yet, but just based on this image alone, I'm suddenly much more enthused. And we have to wait a little bit for this movie, but not too long, because it's coming out in theaters on December 25th, 2018, so we can probably expect a trailer fairly soon, I would expect.
Yeah, and just to add a little bit more, I think that the biggest qualm people had is, like, first of all, Sacha Baron Cohen is also a singer. Like, we've heard him sing before, and he's great. Mm-hmm. So, it like, his casting made sense. And Rami Malek, on the other hand, like, is not, like, somebody that's also known for singing. So I think people were a little bit worried about anybody trying to emulate Freddie Mercury's 4-octave range. But he said in the interview with Entertainment Weekly, who released the still for the world to see, that he is currently working on his vocals right now, and they're going to be incorporating Freddie's voice as much as possible, using his voice when they need to, and then if he can't hit the notes, they will be incorporating somebody who can into the fabric. So that's also, like, it should give you a little bit of ease if that's what you're worried about. But, like, the acting thing, like, I don't worry about, because Rami Malek is amazing. Like, he'll pull it off just fine. And like you said, like, just the way that he carries himself, like, in that one still alone is just very impressive. So
yeah, exactly. And I think I was just wasn't even thinking about the singing, because the idea of finding someone who can both look enough and sound enough like Freddie Mercury is almost like unthinkable, because he had such a distinct voice too. But yeah, this will be interesting.
And from one singer to another, you guys, we have more Taylor Swift news. I know this is what you've been waiting for. Are you ready for it? All right, I'm done. I'm done with my cheesy intros. Taylor Swift officially released another track off of her forthcoming Reputation album. It's called ... Ready For It. And I feel like if you were so-so on Look What You Made Me Do, Ready For It might be a little bit more up your alley. It's definitely, she's full on in this realm of, like, what I would classify as synth pop. So that's not very different from what we heard in the first single. But I do feel like the chorus for this is much, much catchier. Like, I wasn't really sure about the song until it hit, like, the pre-chorus and the chorus, and I was like, oh, I really like this chorus. Anyway, so the song is, I'm enjoying it. I think I like it more than the first single. It's out now, so you can listen to it over on Hypebeable or via Spotify or Apple Music or however you listen to music. It's a little bit sultry. It's pretty good. Won't be for everybody, but again, this is just song number 2 off of a 16-track album, so we'll see if she veers from this synth pop that she's been going towards, or if this is, like, the sound that we're going to get. It actually kind of reminds me a little bit of Sleigh Bells. I don't know if you're familiar with that band, but
no.
They did the, if you remember that movie, The Bling Ring, with Emma Watson. there.
I remember that one.
The trailer when they're like partying and stuff like that, and they have like that really like loud song in the background. That's Sleigh Bells.
Oh, they're the ones that tricked me into watching that crap movie.
There you go.
They were so good. Anyway, interesting. I wasn't a huge fan of this one. I was listening to it. It's all right, but like it kind of falls into the weird middle point where it's not quite like, it's not quite bass that, or like thumpy enough for me to use it as a workout song, but it's not quite musical enough for me to listen to it while I do other stuff. So it's like, it didn't, that was a really weird way of quantifying music for me, but like, it kind of fell into a kind of halfway point, and I might actually, when the remixes and stuff come out, like I might enjoy those more. But for now, I'm like, yeah, I don't know. I don't know how I'm going to feel about this new album. I guess we'll have to wait and see.
Yeah. I think it's so funny because I think people have been like kind of a little shook with regards to the new sound she's going for. But I also kind of feel like we should have seen this coming, because while This Is What You Came For was a collaboration between Calvin Harris and Rihanna, she also wrote that song, which is also along the same veins as this. And then also I Don't Want to Live Forever, which she did as a collab with Zayn just towards the end of last year, is also kind of like a more low tempo version of what she's doing now. So she's kind of, I feel like she's been telling us that this is what she was going to do, but now we actually believe her because we're seeing it or hearing it with our own ears.
Yeah. Okay, so that brings us to the end of the news, and we're going to move into TV show of the week. And Pam, bring it home.
Oh, what am I going to do without The Bold Type, you guys? The Bold Type officially wrapped its first season this past Tuesday with another heart-wrenching episode. This one was, like everything else, it was just so good. First of all, like I think that even though all of these girls that we've come to know were at a bit of a crossroads in their lives, it kind of felt like, I was reading this interview with the showrunner, and she said that even though they left some things open-ended, they wanted audiences to feel okay with like where all the girls could potentially go if they don't get a second season. But I highly doubt Freeform is not going to renew this show, because it's like one of the most buzzed about new series of the summer.
Yeah,
but the last episode was really, really great. We saw Jane take a bit of a leap with a story she's always wanted to do, which centers around rape victims. We learned a little bit more about some of our favorite characters, and it was just like, oh, it was so good. Again, like Bold Type coming in with those hard-hitting storylines, I think that that's what the show does best, and I really hope that Freeform puts us out of our misery and announces season two soon, because I think that they have the potential to do better, you know, like they're already doing great, but I would love to see what they could do with the second season.
Yeah. I'm not caught up yet, but I've heard like really good things about the finale, and I'm excited to watch it. And actually, I realized how I felt about The Bold Type when I was scrolling Twitter, and like I knew the finale had come out and I knew that it hadn't been renewed yet. And then I came across this tweet going like, what I thought it said was, now The Bold Type is canceled and I don't know what to do with my life. And I was like, what? No. But actually it said, if The Bold Type is canceled. So I had like a huge crisis in like 20 seconds before I read it again, and I realized that I may have jumped the gun a little bit. This is how like internet outrage starts, guys. Beware. But yeah, no, so I realized that I really loved the show and needed to be renewed, because I was so sad when I thought it was canceled. So what a good show.
Yeah.
And yeah, I mean, I don't have anything. I just like,
I don't have anything else either. I guess we'll update you guys as soon as we know if it's renewed or not.
Yeah. And we would love to hear the listeners' thoughts on The Bold Type as well, because I know we've got a bunch of people who watch it or maybe have checked it out because of our coverage of it. So we would love to hear what you thought. And also, I have read, like I kind of sneak read a couple of articles, like more critical articles, because I'm always trying to stay critical of the things that I love, including The Bold Type. And I was like reading some of the things that they could improve on in season two, some of the storylines and some of the themes and stuff. And I would be really interested to hear if the listeners have thoughts on that as well, because that would be interesting to incorporate into the discussion, particularly when I've seen it too. So it's not just you like talking to yourself. So we are going to move on to listener feedback now, and we have a bunch of tweets that we're going to read. And why don't you go ahead and start?
All right. Haley says, I was so pleasantly surprised by the Winner's Curse series. Love it.
Yeah, same. I was very pleasantly surprised too. Although I'm not finished yet. And Abby Lee says, hashtag Beauty Queens is one of my all-time favorite books. I'm also so into...
Look what you made me do.
That was a hard hashtag. I've always loved her honesty and incredible songwriting. And yeah, Beauty Queens was the book we talked about last week about the all-female Lord of the Flies reconceptualization book. And I'm excited to read that as well.
Laura says, my Facebook time hop showed me my reaction to the end of Merlin. I have forgotten how strong my feelings were. Always foreshadowing our upcoming rewatch. I love it.
Yeah, we'll do it, guys. Sorry.
Yeah. Thanks for the Winner's Curse, Rec. I also really need to read Raven Boy's book, too. Hope to read Listen to These soon.
The Lady Ash says, okay, I listen to the Lady Step. I will join the Merlin Watch. I've never seen it before, and I'm excited to go through it with y'all. Okay, so good. We can start now. The Lady Ash has joined us. That's what we were waiting for.
Yeah.
No, we're just lazy. I'm so excited that you'll be joining us, and I know a lot of our listeners are really, really stoked for us to start watching Merlin, so hopefully, like, within the next couple of weeks, I'm sure that sounds doable. We can talk about like how we're starting and how many episodes we want to watch and what pace we want to go at and stuff like that. And we should actually probably get the listeners involved with that as well, but we'll sort that out.
Put up some polls.
Yeah.
Maybe. Lauren says, I just binged Wynonna Earp this weekend and there was only one season on Netflix. That's rude, Netflix. What happens? I need answers.
Okay. So, well, in season two, no. Oh my god, I hope that you find a way to watch the second season. I mean, obviously it's available on Sci-Fi, but if you don't have access to that, then I guess you have to wait. But now that season two is done, I expect that the DVD will come out soon, if nothing else. Season two is really good though, so you have a good thing to look forward to for sure. Shelley says, I totally forgot to write in again and say that I finished The Student Prince like the day after I last tweeted. Yay!
Yay! Our favorite fanfic ever.
Yes.
Chanel says, oh my god, I just heard my tweet on the show. We loved Riverdale. That's right. Chanel and Bay were watching Riverdale. I remember now. We loved Riverdale and finished the show already. Ready for season two. Love that Arya is now responsible for the deaths of the people that... Ooh, Game of Thrones spoiler.
Oh shit, I was like, Arya, Riverdale, who?
We'll leave it there.
I was so confused.
Just in case.
You switch shows midway through the sentence.
I know.
Anyway, I agree. Not with Riverdale, though. I don't agree with that.
I do.
Yay. And speaking of Riverdale, we have a tweet from Betty Anderson, who says, speaking of Lord of the Flies and Libba Bray, who wrote Beauty Queens, I just want to recommend this great article, and she is linking to an EW article, an interview with Bray, where she talked about the Lord of the Flies adaptation, and we should probably RT that so our listeners can check it out. Yeah, I was looking into that as well, because I know she did a number of tweets as well, where she was like, hello, I did this already, and I think that's great. I think it's, you know, again, women, ironically in this case, are so often overlooked, so it's nice that she's drawing attention to herself.
Mm-hmm. Grady Bridges says, I hope Tay-Tay is the first 47 minutes and 29 seconds of Hype 159.
Oh, sorry.
Sorry, Grady, but we have more Tay-Tay talk this time, so.
Mm-hmm. Hashtag ready for it. Like 5 minutes.
Yeah, I'm always ready for it.
All right, and that's a good place to leave it, I think. We're at the end of our show, and if you would like to join the conversation, you can tweet hype at hype. No, you can't. You can tweet us at hypeablehype. You can email us hype@hypeable.com. You can find us on Instagram at hypeablehype. You can find us on Tumblr, which is hypepodcast.tumblr.com, and you can Find us on hypeable.com itself, which is hypable.com. That's where all the news stories that we talked about this week are available to read. And you can also go into the podcast section and leave a comment on this latest episode if you have anything to say. And don't forget to check out our Patreon and consider becoming a patron and supporting the show. That is at patreon.com/hypepodcast. And our discussion this week will delve deeper into this quote-unquote superhero plateau that we may be finding ourselves in. So we look forward to seeing you on Patreon, or alternatively seeing you back here for episode 161. Have a great week, everyone. Take care of yourselves out there. My name is Lena.
And my name is Pamela.
Bye.
Bye.
I had to pause because my little Octavia Funko was falling over.
Oh, no.
I love her. She's my favorite. I wasn't expecting this. I think it's because
foreshadowing for what's to come.
Is like, oh, God. Yeah, I have a red marker here ready to... but I did get the Clark and Raven and Octavia Funkos just because, like, they're going out of production. So I was like, I should probably get them because I don't have anything to 100. And I got Clark and Raven, and I was like, oh, that's so cute. And I put them on my shelf. And then I was like, maybe I should get Octavia too. And I got her, and now, like, I love her.
Oh.
And I keep her with me. And she is also the only one that doesn't fall over where she stands, so that also helps.
That's pretty
anyway.
Good. It makes sense that you have them, though, because, like, one, it, like, it's the 100, but also, like, it's good on your plight to only have strong female Funkos.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. It fits my brand.
Right, that's what I was looking for, the brand.
Yeah, but I have to, like, stop myself from buying more because I could so easily just become addicted. Anyway,
we should start the show. Funko chat.